Welcome to another episode of the Criminal Law Department Presents podcast, a production of the Criminal Law Department at the Judge Advocate General's Legal Center and School in Charlottesville, Virginia. Every 2 weeks, we release a new episode. Today, we're going to have a conversation about a recent opinion from the Court of Appeals for the Armed Forces. Please note that these episodes may contain facts and circumstances surrounding criminal trials. Listener discretion is advised.
All rise. Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. The Honorable United States Court of Appeals of the Armed Forces is now open and in session. God save the United States of America in this honorable court.
Welcome back to another episode of CAF Chats. I'm Major Altimus, and today I am joined by Major Rivera. Good morning, Major Rivera.
Good morning, Alex. It's great to be here.
And we are here to talk about U.S. v. Lease, which is a AMI case that was recently decided in April of 2025. Today, we're going to talk about the procedural history and facts, and then we will run through the analysis and then have some takeaways for the field. So here, the military judge convicted the appellant, Lease, at a general court-martial in accordance with his pleas of two specifications of willfully disobeying a superior commissioned officer and one specification of assault consummated by a battery in violation of Articles 90 and 128 of the UCMJ. The military judge sentenced the appellant to be reduced to the grade of E2, to be discharged from the service with a bad conduct discharge, to be confined for 14 days for the first Article 90 specification, to be confined for 30 days for the second Article 90 specification, and to be confined for 3 months for the Article 128 specification. The military judge then ruled that the periods of confinement would run concurrently. However, what's interesting in this case is that the appellant had already received an Article 15 under nonjudicial punishment for the two Article 90 specifications. The judge, in accordance with both the government and defense, agreed that Pierce credit applied. Now, they disagreed, however, on how the Pierce credit should be applied. The government argued that Pierce credit is day for day, dollar for dollar, stripe for stripe credit, right? But the government's arguing that it should only be applied to the segmented confinement for the two Article 90 offenses, because that is what he received his Article 15 for, was with the two violations of Article 90, the disrespect. The defense, however, argued that the 28 days of Pierce credit that was agreed upon by all parties should be applied against the aggregate confinement, the total 3 months, because it was a concurrent sentence. So this is the first time post MJA 16 that we're kind of seeing how does Pierce credit apply to segmented sentencing. The military judge agreed with the government and found that it applied only to the specific offenses punished under the Article 15, which left the total confinement for the accused to be 3 months based on that Article 128 specification and the 3 months that were adjudged for that confinement.
And Alex, before you go any further, I just want to point out that this case is very interesting because it's a novel issue, right, that it was not before the court. I just want to point out that the military judge found himself in a very unique position when discussing the application of the credit. Specifically said, and I quote, "Rarely I have found myself in a position where I have no guidance whatsoever on whether to blindly follow Pierce with a disregard to segmented sentencing, and quite frankly, with a disregard to the nature of the Article 15 themselves." So the court did not have any guidance. This was something that it was perhaps contemplated, or maybe it was just one of those things that will flow, right, when you make the different changes, and specifically after the changes in 2016 with changing from unitary sentencing to segmented sentencing. And now we find ourselves in a position with no guidance.
Right. And I think the judge does a really good job of being like, hey, listen, I'm in uncharted waters here, having to apply what used to be black and white sentencing credit principles. But now there's a danger of overcrediting the accused or undercrediting the accused.
That's correct.
And so the defense was really arguing that the punishment, that the Pierce credit has to be meaningful, right? So if we're going to give them credit, this isn't meaningful in a segmented sentence where you have concurrent sentencing, because it's going to run together, which makes it that 3 months. So he's really not receiving any credit. So we don't really get into in this opinion on what the defense advised their client, because this was a guilty plea. But I think we'll have some takeaways for the field when we get there about what maybe defense needs to make sure they're talking about with their client when we talk about Pierce credit. So Lynn, what was ACCA's ruling?
In this case, ACCA affirmed the military judge's ruling I think partially because the judge did a wonderful job building the record and also explaining the reasons why he was awarding credit the way that he did. And in the end of the day, he ended up taking the government's proposal and just going with that. And that was the ruling.
Yeah. So ACCA doubled down and said, hey, listen, Pierce credit must be applied only to the offenses that were previously punished, not unpunished offenses. And then they do a good job of saying, like, hey, this is not going to the total sentence. It's to prevent double punishment, right? And so if you're getting the credit for the things that you've already received non-judicial punishment for, it should not apply to the entire sentence, particularly on allegations of violations of the UCMJ that you've not been punished for.
And it's an interesting argument because basically what they're saying is you don't get double punishment, but you're also not going to get double credit.
Right. So what did CAF grant for this?
CAF granted on one issue, and the issue was whether the military judge and the Army Corps correctly apply USB Pierce in awarding credit for appellants to prior non-judicial punishment to a segmented sentence.
And how did CAF analyze the case?
Okay, first, before we start analyzing the case, I think it's important to note that the standard of review regarding the proper application of confinement credit is a question of law that is reviewed and novel. So CAF starts fresh, taking a look at the application of that confinement credit. Here, the court begins by addressing the argument from appellant that the military judge's application of Pierce has zero impact on the length of the sentence. Now, it is important, as you previously noted, this is a guilty plea. So the defense had to explain to their client how Pierce credit works and the fact that the case law, USB Pierce, states you will receive credit, right? And this is the discussion that we have is stripe for stripe, dollar for dollar, so you will be receiving credit. Here, what the defense
is...
But
it doesn't say it has to be the Pierce case. It doesn't say that the credit has to be meaningful.
That is correct. And that is an interesting take when the defense is arguing and they come up with that specific wording of meaningful. There's nothing in the rules saying that it should be meaningful. There's nothing in the case law saying that it has to be meaningful, just that you have to receive credit for those previous NJP.
While Pierce does not say that it has to be meaningful, what does it appear the defense is trying to analogize this to?
It seems to be they're trying to make an argument, trying to make it analogous to illegal pretrial confinement, when in fact it has to be meaningful, the relief that the appellant receives.
And does CAF kind of buy that argument?
Well, not really. CAF goes through the analysis and in saying this court will adopt a simple application of Pierce credit and we're going to apply it to the credit that is due, which in this case is just to the segmented sentencing. Basically, those non-judicial punishments that were, as the lower court mentioned, were basically lifted from the Article 15, put on the charge sheet. We're going to give you credit for that, but we're not going to give you additional credit for other charges that were unrelated to the NJP.
And CAF says, like, hey, hear your argument, but there is absolutely no case law to support that it has to be meaningful. And so they're not reading into it what the defense is, and they have no case law to back that up.
That's correct. And I will say also the court notes that all of the benefits cited in favor of applying Pierce credit to the total adjudged sentence also pertain equally to a determination that Pierce credit applies only to the segmented sentence that corresponds to the offense that previously served as the basis for non-judicial punishment. Basically, that fairness argument, right, that they're raising also goes for, hey, we just want to make sure you don't receive double credit.
Right. And CAF talks about that as like a windfall credit, right? Because if we were to apply Pierce in the way that the defense is arguing that we should, you would not only get credit for the things that you have been punished for, but you'd get credit for the things that you have not been punished for, which does seem to be, like you said in the beginning, not only preventing double punishment, but granting double credit.
That's correct. So in the end, relying on the CCA's opinion, CAF comes back and explains that imposing credit not only to the segmented sentences, there will be no credit where no credit is due, but in the end, the accused will still receive credit.
Right. And they emphasize a lot that even if in concurrent sentencing, it makes the credit appear meaningless in practice, the Pierce credit principle, where no double punishment, is satisfied. So understanding, I think, as we kind of finish out that is when we talk about our takeaways, is understanding that it is satisfying what Pierce is set out to do, which is to prevent you from being punished twice for the same offense.
That's correct.
So what did Calf hold?
Calf ultimately upheld the conviction and stated that credit is mandated by USB Pierce, but it will only apply to a segmented sentence that corresponds to an offense that previously served as the basis for nonjudicial punishment. Pierce credit does not apply to an aggregate term of confinement. So basically, they do agree with the government's proposal. They affirm the lower score and then the CCA, and they uphold that conviction.
And I think it's interesting, too. There's no dissents in this. All judges are in agreement that this is how Pierce credit shall apply. So let's talk a little bit of takeaways. I think first I want to ask you, the defense seemed to not raise what Pierce credit was going to be until they were in their guilty plea. Do you think there's some benefit to defense potentially bringing this up sooner to find out how the court is going to apply Pierce credit, and if it is?
I think that's one of the takeaways for defense counsel. You have to understand now with this opinion, with what the application of USB Pierce or lease credit, you have to understand what are the potential repercussions, right? Because potentially that accused, your client that you were having conversations with about potential application and saying you will get 14 days of credit or 28 days, right? The math might be different. And now we have to understand that. And I think potentially that will be part of our negotiation during the guilty plea phase.
But I think it's interesting, too. So I don't know when this guilty plea and the case is silent on whether or not it was just confinement was given a range or what this was going to be in the guilty plea. But it doesn't say whether or not it was concurrent or consecutive. But I think CAF makes a point that it's not really going to matter if it's concurrent or consecutive, that whether the MJ determines a sentence to confinement shall run concurrently or consecutively, the result is the same. The accused receives relief that is effective and meaningful towards the offense for which he has already been punished and not towards an offense for which he has not. So even in this case, if it had been a consecutive finding, right, and we still apply to that segmented, he would have been in a worse situation because he still would have had those 15 days extra from spec 2 that wouldn't have been covered by the pretrial confinement. So I think that is something that can be negotiated in terms of concurrent versus consecutive, but I think the result is the same.
No, I think that's an important consideration. And I think as I was reviewing some of the takeaways for the field, it got me thinking, what about punitive exposure? If we're lifting those charges from a charge sheet and we are preferring charges and just putting it on the charge sheet, is that going to make a difference? Because now you're potentially increasing the accused exposure.
But we do know, right? And so, and I think that's interesting because I was talking about that in the office where I wasn't a huge, when I was a prosecutor, I didn't necessarily, if things had already been settled in Article 15, I wasn't likely to put it on a charge sheet. But what we know about NJP is that it's not convictions. It's not double jeopardy in terms of the actual constitutional right against double jeopardy, right? It's not a conviction. And so you can do this. But I think government, the takeaway for you is, do you want to, if you're going to lift right from the Article 15 and put on the charge sheet, the judge is going to do exactly what the judge did in this case, right? And you may get full credit for those. And so unless it's kind of, there's a tactical decision for it, I think understanding that you still are in charge of your charge sheet, you don't necessarily have to put the Article 15s on there unless you want the conviction or whether it's some tactical reason to do so. And I think for the government, you've got to be able to be on your toes and argue against this windfall relief, right? When sentences run concurrently. You have the discretion to charge what you want, but you need to be on the lookout for when defense is making this argument that they are not entitled to the windfall. They are entitled to the credit upon which their accused deserves, not everything.
And Alex, I think you bring a wonderful point. You must have a reason, right? And when we're teaching students charging, what is your reason for charging this? Why do you want it on the charge sheet? And very well, as a prosecutor, you might have a wonderful reason to have it there. But now understand that you need to be smart and you need to be on your toes when it comes to sentencing credit. And how is that going to play out? And do you really need to go down that road, understanding there could be potential repercussions when it comes to negotiating a guilty plea, when it comes to sentencing credit, where perhaps otherwise you wouldn't have any sentencing credit? And also, it's just like making sure that the defense also understands, because I think there's a danger We didn't see that in this case, that potentially that client doesn't understand how is that credit. And I was very surprised that they didn't go down that road. And we didn't have that in this specific case, but potentially having that client said, no, you promised me this was the amount of credit, and that's not the credit that I got.
Right.
And in the end.
Right. And I think that's a huge takeaway for defense. We now have an answer. We now know unanimously from CAF of how Pierce Credit is going to apply to the new segmented sentencing, right? And so you have to make sure that you're advising your client that this is not going to take away from the max, from the aggregate thing, right? And being able to argue to the judge why it is charge for charge, right? Why the government did, even if they don't lift it exactly, why that spec has already been punished under an Article 15. But I think making sure your client knows that the Pierce credit is not going to apply to the aggregate is a huge point. And you want to make sure that you now have that answer. It's not up in the air anymore. And so making sure that everybody's on the same page, I think, is going to prevent any of those issues you're talking about in the future.
So there you have it. You now have lease credit, which is the application of USV Pierce. And for the field and the fleet, now you have an answer.
Thank you so much, Lynn. And that is another episode of CAF Chats. Please join us in 2 weeks when we discuss another case.
Thanks for joining us today for another episode of the Criminal Law Department Presents podcast. If anything you heard sparked a thought, we'd love to connect with you. Your comments help us create better future content for the field or the fleet. Reach out to us on Facebook or Instagram. The information can be found in the show notes for today's episode. The views expressed in today's podcast are those of the presenters and not necessarily the Judge Advocate General or the Department of the Army or the Department of Defense.
Thanks, counsel, for both sides. And the court will stand in recess until further order of the court.